Bible reading today comes from Psalm chapter 91, found on page 477 in your pew Bibles. You who live in the shelter of the Most High, who abide in the shadow of the Almighty, will say to the Lord, "My refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust." For he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, or the arrow that flies by day, or the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or the destruction that wastes at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right side, but it will not come near you. You will only look with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord your refuge, the Most High your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you, no scourge come near your tent. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the adder, the young lion and the serpent you will trample underfoot. Those who love me I will deliver. I will protect those who know my name. When they call to me, I will answer them. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue them and honour them. With long life, I will satisfy them and show them my salvation.
Good morning. The topic came to me: failure is not fatal. It came to me without capital letters, in the middle of something. Failure is not fatal. So I started looking for it and found it. I started looking for why it was given to me. Despite what the motivational speakers will tell you, failure is not an opportunity to be embraced. Large failures, public failures, are gut-tearing, mind-numbing, paralysing events. And private ones are just the same. Just have a look at these quickly with me. This comes just out off the, you know, ether, into Googles. And it says, for every winner there are dozens of losers. Odds are you're one of them. Quitters never win and winners never quit. You know the motivational? And then at the bottom comes the sarcastic. But those who never quit and never win are stupid. And ultimately, failure, when your best just isn't good enough. There's truth in each of those. Sneering, sniggering, sarcastic truth. The world laughs about failure and wants you to laugh about it as well, to normalise it. Because they laugh because they have no hope. I liked your clip, Pete. I hadn't seen that one before. And I'd built in a poor version of one myself. These guys here are running a race. Only one will be the winner. The rest will be, you figure it out. The guy coming third there is Gordon Pirie, head and shoulders above the rest, like Saul. The guy coming second is an Algerian man running for France called Alain Mamoun, one of my life's heroes in matters of character. And the one coming first there, with his face twisted like he's in mid-heart attack, is Emil Zatopek. And he always looked like that. From the first lap, you'd have sworn he was about to drop dead. But he didn't. He just kept going. In the celebration Olympic Games in London in 1948, he ran in the 5,000 metre event and he met Alain Mamoun. His proper name is Ochaka, which is an Algerian name which means destiny. And they became friends. They raced the race. Zatopek won. These days you'd say, of course. Mamoun came second. For the next 4 years, now, remember, this is post-World War II Europe. Athletics wasn't top of the pops, but they would have met and raced many times. Every time. Zatopek first, Mamoon second. This picture's from the Helsinki Games. Zatopek turned up for the 5,000 and raced. He won. Mamoon came second. He saddled up for the 10,000 metres. Zatopek, he won. Mamoon came second. And then unbelievably, he ran out and ran the marathon and won it in something just over 2.5 hours, a world record for the time for those days. Mamoon didn't know he was going to do a marathon and he didn't run. So he turned his mind to the marathon. And for the next 4 years, another 4 years of athletic meets and trying again, every time, Zatopek first, Mamoon second. Until we come to 1956 Games in Melbourne. Zatopek only came to Australia one time. This was it. And he ran one run, one race, the marathon. Mamoon ran two. And for him by now, it wasn't about winning a race. It was about beating his friend. It was about, here was the point of failure for him if he couldn't beat this man. And in Melbourne, Mamoon won. And he stood at the finish line and waited. Zatopek came in sixth. And there's this lovely story. There's no picture of it because the cameras weren't so popular then, but there's a lovely story of Zatopek standing up and saluting him when he found out that his friend had won. And you can draw what you like out of a motivational story like that. But I always think to myself, did everybody beat Zatopek? Hardly. Matter of fact, his fame is such in Australia that every year since 1956, every year, there is a 10,000 metre race here in Australia called the Zatopek. For that one marathon, Mamoon's last, quite illegally, the Olympic stadium flew the French flag for 48 hours because they appreciated what had gone into that. Now, I'd like to bring you today a word of encouragement. It's about the failures that come secretly in our lives that stop us or hinder us or get in our way from praying. I don't want to give you a word of encouragement like a soppy pat on the back that says, there, you'll be all right in the end. You know, I want to do more than that, like an expectant urging that says, go again, get up, you can do it. That sort of statement with the certainty in its tone that says more than actually what the words say. And while I speak up here, I'm not exactly saying don't listen to me, but be happy to listen to the words that come to your spirit today. This is a topic of failure. It's hardly ever spoken about, but it's in every life, in degree. I've been drawn constantly over our recent five-part series on prayer to consider why it is that I've been so unsatisfied for some time now with my own attempts to reignite my prayer life. You know, why is it that we human people, because others have shared this thought with me, why is it that we find it so hard to restart, to reignite, to rekindle, to repurpose the simple act of praying when we clearly know, without any doubt, that it's Yahweh's purpose for us. It's his desire for us. We used to pray. We used to achieve a great deal out of that. We used to read the Bible. We used to understand and grow out of that. But because, what? The results weren't what we expected? Or maybe we felt like there was no response from the one we were praying to? Our efforts flagged. Or maybe something different. Maybe our life was pretty good compared to others, and we became a bit cruisy about it. Maybe not having to pray became the habit. and our prayer life, our two-way conversation just dried up. How do you get that back? And then a five-part series on prayer comes along, and when we reach back for that familiar feeling, well, for me, it wasn't there. I mean, did everyone pray the same prayer during the vigil last week? Or was it just a well-intentioned wall of noise that God had to deal with? Maybe one of life's someones in your life has laughed at you when you've said that you pray and completely dismissed your lifestyle. Maybe that was the point that said failure in your life. Or lastly, maybe through praying alone and aimlessly, we just wore out. And the world, being Satan's kingdom, saw to it that we didn't ever get back to restart. Maybe we saw ourselves as having failed and therefore unworthy. Maybe we weren't even aware of the self-assessment of failure. And then we saw the state of having failed in that as permanent. Someone once told me, you can't be a Christian. He was the sort of bloke who wore a long black dress and a really natty, bespoke vermilion hat. He would have fit right in with our SSM survey debate that's going on right now. Could you all just read that one time out loud? Leaves a taste in your mouth, doesn't it? Now, I want to say to you quickly that some of you will have, all of you will have heard that with a different inflection. For some, it will be like a parent. Oh, Johnny, you can't be a Christian. It's an authority figure speaking down to you. There you are, you've failed, you can't be a Christian. Some of you will have heard that with an inflection like Jack Nicholson's Colonel Jessup character in A Few Good Men. You remember him sitting in the courtroom, spitting his answer at Tom Cruise? You can't be a Christian! Like you're not good enough, you don't have a character, you don't have the strength, whatever it is, it's a personal thing, you can't be a Christian. Some of you will have heard that from a social connectedness point of view. Oh, you can't be a Christian. Like, you're not one of us, surely. And all these ways of saying the words, by their inflections, say failure, outsider, give it up. I had to go back to the word, had to go back to the book to where the words only held the inflection that I attributed to the God of hosts, to know any peace at all that I was on the right track. I mean, I don't dress like Jesus. I don't go to church on a Saturday. I don't do the duties of the festivals, all things that Jesus did. You know, if you look at other religions, Buddhists dress like Buddha and sit with their eyes closed for a while. Muslims dress like Muhammad, pray five times a day. I wasn't doing the things that Jesus did. Matter of fact, if I wanted to copy Jesus now, I'd be a Jew. Actually, from his point of view, I wasn't a Christian. He was right. He thought the word was a noun, an identity, whereas actually it's an adjective. So you can be a Christian person. You can hold Christian ideals and ethics, but there's no Christian noun to be. Now, I've rambled on with that a bit, but I want to give you space, just hearing my voice, to think, as people do, as I do, when I drift in sermons, and stuff gets personalised. You start thinking about, you stop listening to what I'm saying as my problem, not what happened to me, and start listening to what happened to you. And God's going to be talking to you about that. I know he is. So, failure is not fatal. Who said that? I'll tell you. I don't know. But it's attributed to this man. Born at the closing of the Industrial Revolution into privilege. He was given all the advantages of schooling, and although a bad student, he became an educated man in history, in the Bible, and in the classics. His future failures would see the deaths of thousands of men. And yet after those failures, he single-mindedly enabled an entire empire to say, we will never surrender, when others were saying, give it up. Here's the whole quote, I found it. Success is not final, failure is not fatal, it is the courage to continue that counts. Now, I can't find that in any of his works, but if you look in the intergoogles, it's attributed to Churchill. And I worry a bit about that courage part, but he had another quote attributed to him as well. Success, as you can see, is going from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. What a great idea. And I can tell you an original motivational quote from my own life. A very wise music teacher used to tell my girls, practice does not make perfect. It increases the repertoire of ways that you have to recover from your mistakes. What a clever thing. These quotes, they cut right through, you know. It does take some courage. I mean, that part is not completely incorrect. It does take some courage to pray again, because the first thing you have to do is face yourself when it seems like you're just there again with the same list of wants and needs, the same form prayers, because you can't put into words the way that you feel will be understood out of your circumstance. And I'd encourage you to go back to week 2 of Pete's series and listen again to that. And while you're doing it, ask Yahweh what language he speaks. Back to my original point, the world system, the oikos that Paul used to write about, wants you to fail and to feel as a failure. Do you know that? Especially in the things between you and heaven. The world system says that failure is fatal. It wants you to stop right there and never try again, because the world is full of ones who have failed and lack the courage to pray again. And they want company so they can feel good about themselves. And I tell you what, the world system constantly conflates and misunderstands defeat and failure. They're not the same thing. I just told you a really nice story about Alain Mamoun. Defeated for 12 years almost in a row, and yet he didn't feel like a failure. He felt like trying again until he wasn't coming second. Defeat and failure are very different, far apart things. I've sat in motivational talks where the hype meister up the front will say things like, winning is everything, coming second is the first loser. You know, these things are said by people, honestly, in my mind, I think they've got no hope. They deny the truth that Yahweh knows the future that he has for us, for you. I mean, what if growth were voluntary? Should I look back and say, well, I wasn't a 6-footer when I was 9, so I guess I'm not one now? Should I look back and say, I didn't keep to my prayer vigil, my prayer plan, my ideal last time, therefore I shouldn't try again? That's what the world wants you to say. They want you to see the problem as just being too big. It's not worth having another go. Futility. You always miss 100% of the shots you don't take. True enough. But then the sarcastic line says, statistically speaking, you also miss 99% of the ones you do take. They want you to feel that failing is normal and it's just doom. Now, if you can't see that, oh yeah, you can, good. It's meant to represent a starry night sky. And those of you who have already experienced this will know that the further you remove yourself from other light sources, the brighter the stars come, the more stars you see. Scientists tell us that the light from some of those stars has been travelling for multiple millions of years to get here. Now, wait a minute. There's a whole other topic around that I won't get into today, other than to say that Yahweh made the light before he made the stars, right? But I'll use starlight as an example. Do this for me now. Look at this candle. Keep your eyes on that. Close your eyes and reopen them. Instant, isn't it? The light's right there. As soon as you open your eyes, it's right there. You don't have to do anything to attract that light into your eye. Nothing goes out from you to the candle. It's just right there. And the same's true of the stars. When you turn your eyes starward, that light hits you right in the eye. Amazing. A rifle marksman that could hit a target much bigger than your eye, say 1,000 metres away, he'd be pretty happy with himself. But that light, having travelled all that way, and you can even duck your head, it still hits you right in the eye. There's no break. The light's just there, wherever you are, all the time, just as Yahweh made it. And when I say a thing like that, you think, but he's God. He can do anything. Consider three things with me that you can do. Being careful not to say can't here. That Yahweh won't do. Because of the way he's organised this life as we know it system. You can love him. Humans have free will. You can surrender to him. Same thing. He will never force you. You can pray to him. And he really wants us to do that. You know all those quotes, in everything give thanks, pray unceasingly, a people who will humble themselves and pray. All those quotes that we've heard. He really wants us to pray. But how can we get back to that? We're mature people now. We've been through that initial flush of praying all day or finding prayer easy or new and exciting and experiential. Now, how do we do it again? How do we flush off the sense of failure? You know that moral that you hear sometimes, Messiah was God talking to man, religion is man trying to talk to God? That's failure talk. Just put that aside for now, unless you think you can bridge the gap between man and God. The light from a star, or our candle, comes to you in order that you can say that you see it. You don't see it at all. It sends the light to you. The same, picture this. Prayer is the same. Prayer starts with Yahweh. It goes out from him with power. And it's an all-enveloping presence. So that for us to pray unceasingly, or at all we have to do is turn into that stream. And before you say that doesn't still solve the problem, consider our reading today. That does not say he that is good enough, he who is clever enough, he who has never failed before, he who is dependable. This just says he who, he that. In other words, he who chooses. And there are any number of supporting scriptures that you should go home today and find to make sure I'm not making this up. I'll show you one, John chapter 1. But as many as received him, those of us that went to the right Sunday schools, remember a character called Asmonius. This is him. He's the brother of whomsoever. As many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God, even to those who believed on his name, who were born not of blood, not of the will of the flesh, not of the will of man, but of God, born of God. Now in that bottom verse there is the whole of mankind as we are in our system. When it says blood, that's your flesh, that's your body. when it says the will of the flesh, that's your soul. The will of man, that's your spirit. None of that, no factor in mankind had a part in becoming the children of God. As many as. It's a choice. Okay, the last verse in what we just read, Margaret just read in Psalm 91. Because he has loved me. One of the three things that you can do that Yahweh won't do in our system. Because he has loved me. Not because this man was clever or courageous or strong. Not because you've never fallen short or failed. Not because this man was a winner in the eyes of the world or even been dependable. None of those things. Just because you've loved him. Please take a second now to see prayer in this way. To be in conversation, one has to listen and speak. This room is full of prayer right now. I know it is. On many subjects. Some of them we've got on our list today. Some of them we've never even thought of. The room is steeped in prayer that's coming from God. Now, I know that Jesus gave us an example of a prayer type, and I know that the prophet made special mention of how weird it was that Hannah should be praying quietly in the temple, but there's really no pass mark on prayer. There's no right and wrong way to do it. That's because we're not doing it. No matter how good you think you are at praying, no matter how bad you are, no matter how many times you think you haven't said the right thing in your last prayer to God and failed, you're not doing it. Prayer is coming to you like light comes to you from the stars. All you have to do is turn to God in your heart, with your eyes, stand up, whatever you like, and you are in prayer. Pray with me right now, out aloud. Lord, send rain. Lord, send rain. The earth needs rain right now, Lord. Ordinary rain, wet rain that will run in the gutters. Lord, please send rain. You think that's not a prayer? That's a prayer. We're not the ones doing it. Come on up, band. We just take part. And all you have to do to take part is to be willing. There's no strength you need. There's no courage that you need in that other than within yourself. We just take part in the prayer that started with God and came to us.